This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Called We Five.
Yep.
The song's called You Were On My Mind. There you have it. We continue with the All Marine Radio Head Chef here on a Friday. Gracious enough to join us from the prep room before he goes under. And okay, hold on. I screwed this up, okay? I played the wrong part. Here's part one. What the shit?
Yeah.
No shit. All right, hold on. Let me put. Stand by. Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable how to screw this one up. Anyway, he's at the hospital right now having to sting. So we recorded this because he doesn't like to miss. I mislabeled them in some form of stupidity, and so we'll sort it out right now. On Air Producing, everybody loves it. That's right. Everybody loves it. Stand by. What a shit show. And it was going so smooth, too.
Good morning, Vietnam! Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is this a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early.
That's right. When you hear that introduction and you hear Steppenwolf, you know it's time for the man, the myth, the legend, Uncle Mountain himself, Pete Kimball Holmes, the All Marine Radio Head Chef. What is up, my friend?
Not me yet, but no, it's great. Nice to talk to everybody. It's Friday, and away we go with another show.
Yeah, truth be told, you're having, as you told us last week, you're having a little... You're having a little medical procedure right now, and by the magic of communications and the graciousness of your hospital, you're doing this while you're having that medical procedure done, right?
Right. I'm laying here talking to you guys, and I've got a drip going for a few hours, and then I go in at 1 o'clock for an angiogram.
Nice.
And
all right, so we're right. Like, yeah, we're right in the middle of this. This is awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
it's nice that they let me have a phone in cardiology in the prep room.
Yeah. Yeah. So, big shout out to everybody in the prep room. All right. And look, if you got to go, if they got to wheel you in, you can still talk while they're doing their thing. Just say, look, don't mind me. I'm just going to be giving some cooking advice, whatever. Have at it. So, yeah.
Well, that's why we're talking now, because once I go in the OR, they give me this mess.
No. You tell them, give me something else. Look, you just do whatever you got to do over there. I'm going to be over here.
I'm talking to Max.
Exactly. I'll turn
do
my
your,
head.
Do your stuff and leave me alone.
Yeah, here, take my arm. You can use it. Do whatever you want. I'll be over here. Nothing to see here. Blah, 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 blah. You know, that makes sense to me. The
Yeah.
Yeah, what the hell, man? The, right, the, you know, I want to, before we get into pleasantries and all that, I had somebody email me a question during the week, and the question is essentially, hey, Mac, do me a favor. Ask this chef how he ran his crew, because I have a friend that's in the restaurant business, and their turnover is incredible, from bussers to dishwashers to waiters. It seems like he's turning over new people constantly, and he's, with the exception of waiters who don't turn over as much, I assume, because they're making better money, how did he do that? How did he cope with the constant turnover, or did he have that problem? I'd be curious to know so I can pass on the information.
I did not have turnover at Sandy's. I had young guys come in, and even my wife washed dishes when she started baking bread. Everybody that worked for me went through a routine. And being trained in serious restaurant business in Switzerland and Italy, I had certain rules and ways I did things, and that was the right way. But it was a procedure that everybody, whether you were a waiter, a cook, a a server, you all had to wash dishes for a couple of weeks to get the flow and to know how hard it is working in this business. And then you move to your position, or if you want to be, but you move along. But I also paid my employees about double minimum wage. And when I started here, minimum wage was like $2.85 or $2.75 an hour for servers. Well, you can't live on that kind of money. You live off of tips. But so, and cooks got paid higher. Everybody got paid more. Plus, my full-time employees, I bought their health insurance.
Ooh.
And ooh, that was the hook. That was the hook for me. And of course, I treated everybody real well. I like to look at it as a family that I had. And I was the benevolent dictator. and Beth was Queen Bee.
Okay. So let me get this straight. The way you didn't have turbulence is you paid more, and it sounds like you had this process, and then you obviously, it was your own team, and you treated them like that. Let me ask you about this. How did tips work? Because you're right, in that industry, a lot of it is driven by tips. Did the servers keep all their own tips? Did they put it in a common pot? And did they have to share with the bussers and the dishwashers? How did you work that? Because that impacts compensation.
Yes, it does. And most restaurants, if you're a server, you keep your own tips, and then you have to tip out the busser, and you throw a few bucks at the kitchen, and definitely tip out the dishwasher, and it could be anywhere from 5 to 10% of your tips, depending on how much help you got from them. But in my instance, working for me, I made everybody throw their money, because this is how it was in Italy. And that's where I got this idea. You throw your money into one kitty. And at the end of the night, my assistant or the head bartender, which was Richie West, would split up the tips. And you you got a full share if you worked a full shift. If you worked half a shift, you got half a share. And he divided them up into shares for everybody. And then split them up, and it was up to the server to tip their own people. And but I made them share their tips because I wanted everybody working together as a team.
Okay, hold on, So if all the servers got an equal share, how did the busboys get tipped, or how did the dishwasher get tipped? Or did they?
That is up to the crew themselves.
I don't like that.
Well, you know, they had to be tipped out, and they were taken well care of, because when you work for me, you seem to me, because of the food, you made more money because we were busy. And bussers, you asked how John was tipped out. He was before he became a server, he was thrilled with the money he would walk out of there at night. And so, everybody was taken care of. And the reason I made them, pool their tips is because if you walk by a table and all you're thinking about is the tables you have, and you don't look around
right. And
see, oh, that table needs water. That table needs bread. Oh, I wonder if they want their table clear. And my servers were engaged in the whole operation. They were aware of what was going on at all times. If somebody was overloaded, they helped them serve the food. And so consequently, I believe that everybody should share the tips, because nobody just got all the good customers. One server just, you know, they took a different station every night, a area of the restaurant, and they didn't get the same place to work every night. Sometimes they were up front. Sometimes they were, you know, in the bar area. Sometimes they were in the dining room. You know, they all mixed it up.
Okay.
And to me, it was teamwork that made my joints work.
Let me ask you this. Does something like this exist? Because I believe in what you said. This is a team. This is a team event. And I expect everybody to behave that way. But if you don't incentivize it that way, it's not going to work. To me, have you ever seen it done where the dishwashers and the bussers split, like, you know, they each get 10%, and then the servers get everything else? Have you ever seen them mathematically be cut in on the total, and you're not relying on the benevolence of a server, because you may have ones that are good about it, you may have ones that are not good about it?
Well, that's the art form of the way we did it, was everybody took care of everybody, because they know from washing dishes when they started, or being a busser before they were a waiter or a bartender, that you have to spread the goodness around, and you're getting a bigger salary as a server. So you have, and if you're full time, you're getting your health insurance. So it makes it easier for them to buy into the way I believed in.
Okay, but my question was, have you seen it done where they're mathematically cut in?
No.
Oh, you've never seen that, where they're mathematically cut in?
No, I haven't. I just, it's always been that I have observed up to the like in Vegas, the captain spreads the server, and the busser gets automatic percentage, I think, of each table that they work, depending on the bill. But I think that's a union thing. And it's not a bad thing at all. That big, you have to have more rules, because there are always greedy guys,
right,
or men or women, that just take the tips and they don't turn them in. And for me, in my crew, if somebody wasn't pulling their weight, they came to me and said, hey, so-and-so is not pulling their weight. I had a server come to me and said, I thought somebody was stealing from the tip jar. You're not stealing from your brothers and sisters that are working with you, right? And so I put $100 bill in, and it wasn't there at the end of the night. And so I fired his ass, and he never worked again in this town, in any other restaurant. And if it's not theft, if it's just he's not pulling, they're not pulling their weight, we have a discussion, and
okay,
you get a chance.
All right, hold on.
Yourself.
Okay, all right. So the systems are, one, the servers get 100%. And then it's the trickle-down theory that they're good people, they take care of the bussers and the dishwashers. Then alternate systems would be everybody, there's a percentage assigned to the bussers and the dishwashers, and then the servers take, obviously the servers take the lion's share, but there is a recognition of the fact that it is a team event and everybody's going to get a piece of this pie. And then there's a system where you get whatever is on your table, and it's not a team event. Everybody keeps their own. And then hopefully everybody, as you say, to use your term, tips out appropriately. And that's another system. And so,
yeah.
Okay.
And that's why the turnover is so big in places like that. It's because they don't spread it around. And the owner has to, even if the owner doesn't pay for all their health insurance, he should offer them some kind of group plan where they pay at least 50% of the health care insurance. But the owner still has to pitch in 25 to 50%, or even more if they can, but at least half their health insurance in. I don't know how it works in the last 5 years, what's changed. I don't know, but for me, that's the way I was taught and I observed when I was in Europe, and I believe I bought into that philosophy that it takes a team to run a joint, not just one person, not just some super server or super cook. You know, it's got to be a dance. And everybody's just the dance. But that's just my philosophy. It's not necessarily the major philosophy in the business from what I've observed.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I've got another email here. Matt, could the chef go over how he prepares baked potatoes? I've heard you guys talk about it a little bit before I went to do it, and I couldn't find the segment. Could he just review how he makes a baked potato? Chef?
Yes. Well, you take a baked potato, you wash it, you dry it, you rub it with oil, you put kosher salt all over it, you put it on a baking sheet, you punch a hole in each end with a paring knife to let the steam out, so the baked potato doesn't explode in your oven. And then it depends on the size of the baked potato. It could be four. And Beth and I crank our oven up all the way to 450, 500, whatever you want. and it takes 45 minutes to an hour to cook a baked potato. But I personally love baked potato skin. My wife not so much, but I like, you know, that's why you do the oil and the kosher salt on the oil so it sticks. And then when you get done, you do three slices on the baked potato, one lengthwise and then two across, like say like a football for the lacings. You go down and you do about...
Wait a minute, I didn't hear you say, so let me just go back to this. So, regardless of your potato, olive oil and kosher salt, yes?
Yes, yes.
Okay, where do we puncture the potato?
On the end, on each end.
Does it, I've seen forks, and then a knife. Do you have a preference either way?
I prefer a paring knife. You don't need to gouge it. If you want to use a fork knife, you need to do is a paring knife, and you can prick it on the top. I personally do it on each end.
Okay, and then how deep, how far do I have to penetrate the potato in order to make sure that it vents appropriately?
Oh, I'd say no more than a half an inch.
Okay, all right. Not that far. All right. Got it. And then at what temperature and for how long?
450 to 500 degrees for, depending on the size of the baked potato, but say a 1 pound baked potato, that's a monster. They're usually a half to three quarters of a pound.
Okay.
Anywhere from 45 minutes to 1 hour. And then you take your paring knife at the end of that time, and you insert it right in the fat part of the potato, and you can tell right away how it goes in, whether the potato is done. It'll go in and come out easily. You're not having, if you hear it, you know, if you got to push it any hard, it means it's not done in the center. So you might leave it a little longer.
Got it. Now, you cook your baked potatoes hotter than a lot of recipes call for. A lot of recipes I see say 400 degrees for an hour. You do 450 to 500, and if I split the difference, it's 475 for 45 minutes to an hour. Why?
I like the skin to be crisp. I like that skin to have a little snap to it when you pooch it, when you open it up to make a pocket for your sour cream and baking bits and chives, onions, sour cream, butter. but that's just my preference. 400 is perfectly fine. 425, it might take a little longer, but you're still going to get pretty much the same result.
Okay. All right. But that will create a crisper skin as you like it, right? The higher temperature, that's what you're going to get. The potatoes are still going to be done, but on the outside you're going to feel a little bit more crispy skin.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And then you were going to teach poofing the baked potato.
Poaching, P-O-O-C-H.
Poaching, the baked potato. Sorry about that.
It's a kitchen term, folks.
Sorry.
And you have that slit down the middle, and then you have two crosses a quarter of the way in from the end of each potato. You put your thumb and first finger on each side, and you press it together and towards the center, and the potato will open up like a little flower, and it gives you more receptacle for all the goodness you're putting in the potato. And that gives you more area that for the potato to hold whatever you're going to dress the potato with. And that's why I like poaching my potatoes.
Poaching, because you like the... ingredients that go into the pooch. The
You betcha, big boy.
All right. The as long as we're talking about that, twice baked potatoes are a pretty popular item. How do you, or some people call them stuffed potatoes. So how do you go about navigating that one?
Okay, you've got your baked potato.
Right.
You pull it out of the oven.
Right.
You let it sit on the baking sheet on the counter or on the top of the oven.
Right.
Till it cool a little bit. And this is something you can do the day before.
How many minutes is that going to take me?
Well, the same length as it takes to bake your potato.
To cool, it's going to take
a minute. Cool.
It's going
to let it cool.
Yeah.
Maybe 5 minutes,
okay.
10 minutes at the most, and if you have an oven glove or something, or a dish towel, you can hold the potato. You fold the dish towel so you can sit the baked potato in the dish towel in your hands, and then you take before you do that, you cut the top off, but not halfway down. About a quarter of the way down, you make a big oval on the top, and you take the cap off, and you set that aside, because if you want, in the future, that will be a potato skin, which is a whole other program.
Right.
And then you take a soup spoon, and in a bowl, stainless bowl or glass bowl or ceramic bowl, you scoop out all the inside, but you don't go too far to where you puncture the skin and come through. You want to leave just like maybe an eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch of potato in the inside.
Okay.
Everything else is scooped out.
Okay.
And then you take butter, sour cream, and I like chives in there, chopped green onions, finely minced, if you want, not necessary.
Okay.
But mm-hmm. I do, because, and then you make a mashed potato. Now, if you want to make them cheesy, after the mashed potatoes are done, you've added a little milk to get your mashed potatoes, and the potatoes are cooling down. You take your favorite cheese, whether it's Monterey Jack, provolone, Swiss, Parmesan, but I like Monterey Jack or Swiss cheese.
Okay.
You grate that, and then you fold that into the mashed potatoes. You don't want the potatoes to be too hot, because the cheese will melt. But you just want to incorporate that with you add the sour cream. And personally, I like cream cheese with the milk and the butter and a little bit of sour cream. I split the cream cheese and sour cream portion of it. And that's a matter of taste and trial and error on the person's part.
All right. Do you add bacon into this mix?
Yes, you can.
Do you add bacon?
Oh, if I can get away with it, my wife lets me do it. Absolutely, I like to.
Beth is looking the other way. All right, I got it.
And then you take that soup spoon and you scrape it out, and you've got this mixture. And then you put it back in the potato skin, and then you can put a little Parmesan cheese on. Well, you just actually don't put anything until you bake them off to heat them up the next day. Then you can put Parmesan, grated Parm, on the top to make a little crust and a little paprika, and it'll get this golden crust.
Yeah, we love that.
It'll drive you wild. But when you bake them after they've been in the fridge overnight,
okay.
You pull those out. You can do it half an hour or so before you throw them in the oven. And then you turn your oven up to about 425. And then you throw them in. And you, about a half an hour at 425, 400. And then that Parmesan will get golden brown. And you can feel it. You can put a little thermostat in there to make sure that the temperature is at least 160 in the center. Just warm, hot, you know. The steam will start coming out of the side, and you'll see that, you know, there's butter, there's sour cream, cream cheese, milk, and cheese in this mixture, and salt and pepper and whatever you want to put in there. But, and then that's my favorite twice-baked potato. I just think that's one of the greatest things to serve. And it's something that can be done a day ahead. You don't have to crank the oven up that day. But that's what you do if you want a live baked potato that day. But twice-baked, and it heats it up, and it's, then you got this mashed potato and this Viet vessel, and the skin will crisp up again, so you can eat the skin too. That was a great question, Matt, about twice baked potatoes.
It's a great stuff. It's a great and you know they're not that much more difficult to make, and they taste delicious. You know, the other thing is that, you know, potatoes are cheap. You know, so if you want to eat well, cheap, go ahead and work on your potato game, because they are pretty inexpensive. They taste absolutely fantastic, and make I don't care if you're eating chicken or beef or fish. I mean, great potatoes go with all that. So it's a crowd pleaser.
That's what I like to do, is twice baked if you're having company, because number one, you don't have to have little dishes, bowls, and cook off bacon or do a bowl of sour cream and butter. You know, I mean, that's a whole different program for sure. But twice baked, if you're having company, four or five, six people over, man, you just pull those out of the oven, you sit it on top, and you plop it on the plate, and when you bring it to the table, they go, oh, man, that's gorgeous. And that's the way you should roll if you're having a dinner party. I mean, try it, but test drive them a few times to get the right combination of filling that you like.
All right.
Okay.
I love potato talk. Let me ask you this: regardless of what kind, where you buy your potatoes from, what do you look for in potatoes? So I'm at the potato bin. What am I looking for?
You're looking for a potato that's not moldy.
Okay.
A potato, you know, there's eyes, those little dark things that are in potatoes.
Yes.
That's just the way it is. Now, when you scrub your potatoes, sometimes the eyes go in real far, and you want to take a little paring knife and get those out if you're baking a potato. And then if you do that, then you don't have to put a knife in it, because it's already, the skin's already been broken. But there are, I like red potatoes to bake and do twice baked.
Okay, again, regardless of what potato, are you just looking for a healthy potato?
One that's hard, it's not soggy, that is not soggy to the touch, that is just rock hard.
So a potato is a little bit like an avocado in terms of there should be a little give in the skin. Avocados, there should be more give. But a potato is the same way, and if you're grabbing a potato that doesn't have any give to it, you're talking about still a somewhat green potato, regardless of the color of the exterior of the skin?
No. You want a hard potato.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's in the bin. It's not undergrown.
Okay.
It's not a green potato. It's done. But you want a hard potato. You don't want one that's soggy. It means it's at least, could be a year old.
And it's not soggy. So you don't want the potato hard, you want the potato firm.
Yes.
Okay.
Firm, hard, it does not matter. You just do not want them soggy or spongy.
Okay, so how do I tell, can I tell if a potato's not ripe?
I have no idea.
That's okay.
A question I've never heard.
So if it's in the bag and it's firm, it should be a good potato.
Yes. Okay. But if you see as the skin's wrinkled and it's kind of any give or sponginess to it,
right,
then you move on to the next set of potatoes.
Got it.
It's buying individual potatoes or buying them in a bag. You can still check the firmness if they're in a bag. I do. I squeeze all of that, everything.
Do you squeeze them all?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I mean, if I'm looking for potatoes.
You're the big man. You're the big man. You're supposed to squeeze them.
Hey, man, that's what it's all about.
Show business, baby. You got to squeeze the fruit.
That's it.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more of the one and only Pete Kimball Holmes and our Friday hourly visit with the chef. So more of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good,
are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. And press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Continue with the All Marine Radiohead Chef here on a Friday. Gracious enough to join us from the prep room before he goes under. But we've also made arrangements that, look, his whatever procedure today is not going to get in the way of the program. So if they have to work off to one side while he gives us advice on cooking and eating and things like that, that's just the way it has to be. So everybody's okay with that. So I want to thank the very, very lovely doctors and nurses at the Altru Medical compound in Grand Forks, North Dakota. They had a big earthquake. Actually, they didn't have an earthquake. The building buckled. Yeah.
So they tore it down.
Yeah.
And that's where the new hospital's going to be.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so if you can imagine, major medical facility, and all of a sudden, you know, and then within a very short period of time, I want to say within maybe, 4 or 5 days, they had engineers in there, and they came out and made the announcement, we will not be able to reuse the building. And you're like, what?
Yep.
What happened? Yeah, it broke. So, anyway, the miracles of modern medicine. Maybe not so much miracles. All right, we're talking to this chef. We're talking about the restaurant business a little bit, and also potatoes. Here's another email that I dug out of the email bag that came actually a week ago. Matt, could you ask the chef if I'm going to serve a combination of seafood, what would he put together on a plate? I love seafood, and this time of year you can get some great seafood. My idea is to put several small portions of great-tasting seafood, stuff that I can divide up between plates. What would he recommend that I put on a plate?
Well, that's a great question, Matt.
I know the answer to this, too, but I'll let him answer.
What should you do? Because that was one of your favorite meals.
It was.
It's called the Seafood Mixed Grill. And I had two shrimp, large, monstrous shrimp. They were 8 to a pound shrimp on a quarter of an avocado sliced.
Mm.
And they were grilled with garlic. And then I had a butter sauce over that. And then I had 3 scallops on the plate with a different sauce. And then I had a crab cake, a 2 ounce crab cake on the plate with a little bit of the romelard, the kind of like tartar sauce for the crab cake. And then whatever fresh fish I was selling that week, there would be a little 2 ounce, 3 ounce portion of fish. And then there in the middle would be either jasmine rice, white rice, or jasmine is from Thailand, that rice, or India. And then, or wild rice from Minnesota. And then you'd have all these four things around the rice, and any sauces would kind of leak into the rice. And you can put mashed potatoes in there, or scalloped potatoes, but I liked rice with the fish because the rice was lighter, and those four fish, now anybody can do the scallops and the shrimp, and you can make a crab cake. We've made them. You have recipes on your website, and you can make little individual 2 ounce crab cakes for everybody, and you just fry them in a cast iron skillet, and that was one of my favorite dishes to cook, and it's all about timing. The last thing that went on the plate was probably the shrimp, and the scallops, and then the crab cake. You can cook a little bit ahead and keep it warm, and your fish. I mean, it's got to come out pretty close. That would be something like, how to do it for a party. Say you take, you go buy some salmon fillets or a small side of salmon, maybe 2 pound or a pound of salmon, 2 pounds, piece of salmon, and you can cook that any way you want, and then you portion it out when it's done cooking, and then you can cook a bunch of shrimp together or scallops, and you can do the scallops with a barbecue sauce, the shrimp with some sauce, a butter sauce, whatever different sauce you want. We'd have to do a little research on that for you guys. But it's a beautiful presentation, and the portions can be controlled because scallops, you can just count those out. Shrimp, you can count them out. Crab cakes, you know how many people. You can make the appropriate amount of crab cake, and then fish. Say you only have certain fish fillets, but you don't want any skins on these fish fillets. And then you can cook those up and wrap them in foil and then portion them out. You know, say they're a 6 ounce portion or an 8 ounce portion of fish. Then you can cut that in half or quarter it, or cut it in thirds. That's up to you and how much food you want to serve.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I don't know that I've ever suggested this, but this is not the easiest dish in the world to make come out cooking, tasting right, and come out simultaneously. Is that a fair statement?
It's probably as difficult as the seafood, I mean, as the mixed grill that wasn't a seafood.
Okay.
But, yeah, the seafood mixed grill was, I would say, the most difficult thing that I had to cook in the kitchen. When you have a bunch of tickets up and you're cooking steaks or whatever it is else you're cooking besides the mixed grill,
right,
maybe a pasta dish. The mixed grill is by far the one that has to be done last because everything's cooking and you have to plate it almost instantaneously.
Okay.
You can get away with the crab cake and maybe the fish, by having it wrapped in foil and resting, but the shrimp and scallops have to be cooked and plated immediately.
Got it. Is this something that you would tell me that, this is something that you should practice? Don't serve it the first time, to guests, serve it to yourself and maybe your family the first time before you do this for somebody else. Would that make sense?
Yes. Now, a little example.
Okay.
Okay. you're test driving this dish.
Right.
Okay. You have your stove. You have four burners on top of your stove. You have four different pans.
Okay.
One for the fish, one for the shrimp, one for the crab cake, and one for the scallops. And we're going to use those because those are the easiest to prep and get ready. Now, you throw your crab cake in first and your fish in first. It's that crab cake, fish, and then when you flip the fish to the other side and you flip your crab cake, the scallops and shrimp should be on. I always use cast iron skillets in this procedure, and they're cranked up high. The scallops are salt, peppered, and oiled. The shrimp are rubbed with garlic puree, olive oil, and the skillets are dry. And you throw those in, and by the time your crab cake and fish are done, you've already plated your scallops and shrimp. That's how fast they cook. So you definitely have to practice this move, and it's going to take up your whole top of your oven. The rice can be done in sitting in a pan separately or in a crock pot with a lid on it. And so that's a dish up right in the middle of the plate, and then you arrange the fish around that, and then you sauce it. You know, one can be tartar sauce for the crab cake. You can do a barbecue sauce for the shrimp. You can do wet.
But with your consistent advice seasoned taste, right? If you do that consistently, as Kim says, then I think you are right in the front row. I don't think you're in the front row. You are in the front row. So now I was just asking because it is a complex dish. And I mean, again, the other thing I'd say again, in keeping with Kim's advice, first of all, the scampi's to die for, and the crab cake to me was, I love crab cakes. I love the crust of a crab cake, and then as long as whoever's making them knows how to make them. And you can listen to Kim and I talking about crab cakes and how he makes them. All you got to do is go to the website, type in crab cakes, and there's an entry from August 16th, I think, of August 16th of 2016 that we talk about crab cakes. Exactly. And you can hear it. I love those. To me, but they ought to be whatever three fish that you love the most. For instance, chili and sea bass. There's great recipes for chili and sea bass. It tastes delicious. And then depending on where you are, halibut is a great seafood in the upper Midwest. So, and again, all I'm amplifying is Kim's guidance. You know, don't be afraid to tweak it. Whatever your favorites are, you know, are. I like them.
You want tuna. Tuna is easy to portion and to cut that into little rectangles. And halibut and swordfish. Those three are the easiest to buy fresh and portion them out before you cook them. And that would be the way you do it. And then they're oiled, salt, and peppered all over.
Got it.
So you just throw them into the skillet. That would be my recommendation to test drive. Find out which one of those three is your favorite.
Yeah, my point is, no matter what fish you choose, right, and what entrees you use to go with it, you know, my favorites were mashed potatoes and the avocado was on there, and a little bit of, because it's even though the portions are smaller, when there's three different fish servings and then some, not too much mashed potatoes and some asparagus. That's a fair amount of food to slug down, but it's delicious, so it's not very difficult. My only point was, this is not a novice meal to serve. That's why you don't see it served very many places, and you ought to test it out before you do it.
Yes, And you know, you do need to practice it, your timing. Individually, you're standing over it, you can pay attention to it. But when collectively, when you have four different things going, you have to always remember what takes the longest to cook is what you start first. And you follow those guidelines, and scallops and shrimp are the last you put on. Probably, I would say the scallops are the last.
Shrimp is like to die for. What's the difference between shrimp and scampi?
The size. Scampis are bigger. Like, you know, at least the ones we got were like 8 to 10 to a pound. Most everybody buys shrimp that are like 16 to 20 to a pound. So they're half the size of the ones we used to use. And then, that was, but the bigger the shrimp, the sweeter for me they are.
Okay.
And you can grill them with the garlic and olive oil.
Okay, so the only difference between shrimp and scampi is the size and the name of the dish. Scampi always involve garlic and butter?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right, we're making progress. Well, here's an email about that. Mac, you just said you like mashed potatoes and asparagus. What would the chef serve with it? So what would be, and again, don't say what they can. I know you have to, it takes you a lot to talk about what you like and what you would want with it, but that's the question. Okay, so it's going to be another little therapy session. What would Kimmy like with the three fish dishes?
Well, with the four fish on the plate, I would like rice. I would like wild rice. And then I would like asparagus. But not little dinky pencil asparagus, but the Chernobyl asparagus. The big ones that are a half an inch across. And they're those cooked properly. They're bright green, and they have great flavor, and they're not wimpy on the plate, you know. And you only need two or three of them because, you know, they're probably 6-8 inches long, half an inch, a quarter to a half an inch thick, and that's plenty to go with the rice and the fish and the crab cake, the three fish and the crab cake. And that's what I would eat it, the way I would eat it.
Okay, somebody talked to me the other day, and I say the other day, it was a few months ago, and told me how funny you were. And I said, you know, he's really not that funny of a guy. He's a happy guy. But
man, come on. You're killing me, Mac.
In terms of being funny, he's not that funny. And they said, will you do like a series of lightning round questions with him? And get more information out of it. So we're going to do a little bit of a lightning round right now. Okay. Here's the first one. Favorite musical group of all time?
Grateful Dead.
Grateful Dead. Okay. After your favorite, give me three more groups or artists that you really enjoy.
Rolling Stones. Van Morrison.
Van the Man.
And I like Tina Turner.
Tina Turner. So if I looked in your music collection, I'd see those artists would be very prominent in your collection.
Yes, you would.
All right.
You'd probably see as much Janis Joplin because she was a short plane.
Right.
But Tina Turner, the first time I saw her, was at the Whiskey A Go Go in 1964 on spring break.
Whoa.
At the Whiskey A Go Go in LA. And I sat right in the first little cocktail table. And when she came out, with the IKETs, I couldn't stand up until they were off the stage because I, she excited me.
She, had you ever seen anything like Tina Turner when she, when she rolled out?
Oh, no, of course not.
Cool.
Of course not.
Yeah, and nobody.
I saw James Brown,
But nobody liked Tina Turner.
No.
To this day. All right. Interesting. Next. You've traveled a lot, right? A lot to Europe. Of all the places that you've ever been outside the United States, where could you see yourself living?
Florence, Italy.
Why?
The people are great. The food is great. The wine is great. And the country, Tuscany, around Florence, is some of the most beautiful land I've ever seen.
Florence, Italy. Okay, write that down. Of all the different cuisines around the world, which one are you most fond of?
It would have to be probably French.
Why?
Well, I used to go to a pilgrimage into Lyon, France, after the hotel closed in the spring.
Yes.
And we would go to Paul Bocuse's restaurant in Lyon, France.
Yes.
And I had never had that kind of exquisitely prepared food. And taking 3 to 4 hours to eat, the varieties, I mean, from start to the dessert and the cheese trays, the different foods I tasted. I had never had a chicken poached in a pig's bladder before with truffles inside.
Hello.
Oh, come on, man. It's just humbling to eat this food. And you just think of, oh, my God, look what it, how many years did it take this chef to learn how to do this dish? And, just walking down the street in France, and the charcuterie, that's the pâtés, the salamis, the meat that they make themselves, and it's just mind-blowing. And the wine's not too shabby either.
You would take that cuisine. You said you were going to live in Florence, though. So you would take...
Yeah, because Florence... is only about an hour's drive from France. and Florence, maybe 2 hours to Nice.
Well played.
And Monte Carlo and the south of France and get all that seafood. There are different cuisines.
Right.
For sure. But I'd weigh 800 pounds if I lived.
and love every second of it. Next question. Of all the natural beauty that you've seen from Europe to the United States, what is your favorite natural scenic place?
Bangen, Switzerland.
Bangen, Switzerland. Why?
That's
what's there?
Bangen, Switzerland. And it's in the Alps. It's where I worked for 4 years. The absolute mountains in the spring, in the summer, spring and fall, you can hike. They have trails. You can hike all the way across the Alps. They have huts you can stay in, mountain huts, the mountain Swiss mountaineering have. The skiing was spectacular. The scenery. Every day I'd get up and I'd look up and see the Jungfrau. That's the mountain. There's three mountains that used to be on all their tourist posters called the Eiger, the Monk, and the Jungfrau. And the Eiger means Ord. The Jungfrau means Virgin. The Eiger is the Ord. Monk is the monk, Monk.
Okay. All
yeah.
right.
But Vangus is and you look down the Ladebrunnen Valley, and you could only get to this village by foot or cog train. It's about 1,500 feet on a cliff on the side of this mountain, off the floor of the. And the second place would be.
No. You only get one. Nobody cares about the second one. Okay.
That would be it. Vangus.
All right, you walk into a gas station, you're going to buy candy. What do you buy?
Oh, I would buy a Snickers bar.
Okay, Snickers. You walk into a supermarket, you're going to buy ice cream. What kind of ice cream do you buy?
Häagen-Dazs.
You can buy any car in the world. What car do you buy?
I would buy the most tricked out Mercedes-Benz I could get my hands on.
Okay, back to ice cream. You said Häagen-Dazs. I'm not interested in the brand so much as I am the flavor, although you can give me flavor and brand. I'll accept that. So we know Häagen-Dazs.
It would be vanilla.
Vanilla Häagen-Dazs.
Vanilla ice cream.
Pretty exotic there.
Yeah.
Do you put anything on your ice cream? Do you?
I used to put hot fudge on it, but... that was years ago, but vanilla ice cream and hot fudge. If I was allowed to,
if you were allowed to, you would head for that. All right. If you could talk to anybody, living or dead, from any time in recorded history, give me the one person other than Jesus Christ that you would want to talk to.
Oh, James Brown.
James Brown. Would be the man. Okay. If you could see one event in history, what one event would you want to see?
Well, I saw it.
What was it?
Monterey Pop Festival.
That's a concert. That's not an event in history.
Oh, event in history.
Yeah, an event in history. If you could see from any time, what would you want to see?
Oh, I would probably want to see. Oh, jeez. I'm stumped. Jeez.
I'll give you one. I'll tell you what it is. If you could be in a bubble, now you're in a bubble, right? But it doesn't really look like a bubble because bubbles look kind of lame and shit. You know what I mean? If you could be hovering in some kind of cool looking apparatus. That people would look and go, whoa, who's that dude? He must be cool. If you could be hovering in that, in my opinion, right, I would put you over the English Channel on the night of June 5, 6, on the evening of June 6, June 6, June 7, actually, watching your dad flying.
You know, I thought that was too morbid, but that's what I thought of.
Morbid?
This is... Fly that, and also be sitting him beside him in the plane when he did
his thing?
That song, and during the fight in the woods.
Oh.
The Battle of the Bulge, when he delivered supplies to the soldiers that were fighting the Nazis.
Ballers.
That would be, I would be amazed at that also. But flying over the English Channel, watching that whole experience play out in front of me, if I didn't just pooping my pants and pissing my leg down my leg for sure of what was going on.
Your dad. That's
a good one. Thank
yeah.
you.
No, that's what that would have been my answer. I'm not sure about yours, but that would have been my answer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you have a little bit of This Is Your Life from the All Marine Radio Head Chef. All right. Well, look, that's all. We're good. So, You have a good day. Good luck with the rest of your day, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
Well, I'll let you know how the surgery comes out. They're wheeling me into the OR now.
Good boy.
Happy trails, everybody.
Happy trails to you. Until we meet again. Happy trails. Who sang that?
Gene Autry, man.
Don't say it like that.
Gene Autry.
No, he didn't sing that.
Yeah, he did.
I think it's Roy Rogers.
By gosh. I want Gene Autry. Yes, you're right. Okay. I'll buy that.
Here it is.
Do I have time to tell you a story before I go?
Well, if the doctors and the nurses will slow the gurney down so you could tell it, of course. Come on.
Okay. When I was out in Victorville, when I came back to be with my friend,
yes.
Gene Autry had a museum in Victorville. The Roy Rogers Museum was in Victorville.
Okay.
And he used to drive around in his pickup truck with a six-pack of beer. And you'd see him everywhere. And he was so nice. But there was Trigger was there, stuffed. And rearing up on his sign. I don't know whatever happened to that museum, but, yeah, it was in Apple Valley, right beside Victorville.
Apple Valley, California. You know, where they came up with these cowboy outfits with all the fringe and all that kind of stuff. But he made it famous, man. Roy Rogers wearing that fringe, singing those songs.
Yep.
And you know what? And I'll tell you what. I've never, to this day, heard a bad story about Roy Rogers. You know, I went out to the fair and Roy Rogers was there. He was drunk and puking. Told me to quit staring at me or he's going to kick my ass. You've never heard any stories.
Oh, no, come on, man.
I know, he was just a good human being, Roy Rogers.
He was a great guy. And the people that owned the ranch had known him since he was a star. And he was just, they always spoke highly of him.
Roy Rogers and Dale Evans.
Yep.
Yeah, they
were around a long time.
So wave goodbye to everybody, Kim.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
There you have it. Oh, my God. All right, we'll be right back. More on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.